hoping, according to this ACT, it should be done by the end of this financial year, which means we will only implement in 18. And that's an entire year for which we still need to finish the year. So we really under pressure to ensure that this department delivers. And these, all of these frameworks are necessary, they're crucial. But more importantly, what's fallen off the agenda? The gender mainstreaming framework. Remember, the gender focal point is one aspect of a broader issue around gender mainstreaming. We've seen on our oversight now recently, if you don't provide guidance to departments, they find it very difficult to interpret that policy around women empowerment and gender equality. Because they're left to their own devices to think, well, if I've got 40% women or 20% women, I've done what I'm supposed to. But it's not just about the numbers. It's about mainstreaming a program and a service to ensure that it benefits women. An M&E framework of indicators. Why is that important? Because when you do a country report, you expect departments to give you information, but what guides them? When you look at the 9-point plan or any other plan of government, what will guide you to say, well, this is my gold standard, this is what I require from whatever government department or entity. But where is that? Revival of the national gender machinery. They're doing lots of work around awareness campaigns and initiatives, which is great, but how do you ensure that it's coordinated across the country? How do you ensure that you engage in a coordinated manner so that when we do a 365 day and we launch it in Polokwane, throughout the other provinces, it's the same sort of momentum. But how do you do that? And the intention of the national gender machinery was to do exactly that on a national and provincial level, is to coordinate your stakeholders so that you guarantee the message goes via a coordinated manner. National Prevention Strategy on the Integrated Program of Action on Violence Against Women and Children. That's important. In our previous department, we said, what is the key thing lacking around violence? There isn't the overarching framework that says, this is how we need to deal with violence in the country. Police is doing what they need to, justice, social development and health. But we've recently seen the past 2 weeks, 14 children, youth killed in one road. Two young children killed in Khayelitsha. I mean, that's just the Western Cape. That's besides what's happening in the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KZN. The numbers are astronomical. So people are trying to do it. It's NGOs or government departments. But what pulls everything together? And that's what we identified more than 8 years ago, actually. It was a recommendation coming from this committee. The previous committee, when we did the public hearings of the Domestic Violence Act, we need a coordinated framework, a coordinated structure. And we know the council didn't work in the previous department, so they did away with that. And technically, it's social development who has that policy around the interstate program of action to deal with violence against women and children. That's key. So these four very important targets don't actually feature in any of what Christine was saying. In terms of the 6 targets in Program 2 or the 8 targets in Program 3. Yes, they can argue, but they're doing a campaign, they're doing a dialogue. But does it actually talk to these fundamental things? And this is what this committee has been pushing for a long time. The Sanity Dignity campaign. The key question for me, how can we, as this department, come up with a policy framework and cost it if you're not going to deliver on issuing that? Basic Education told us in a previous briefing, we don't know what the scope of the problem is. We don't actually know. The previous risk youth behavior survey that was done in 2011 showed that about 70% of girls have access to family counseling. That 70%, so 30% is not, but that data is old. So firstly, Basic Education doesn't know the size of the problem. Number two, Basic Education saying, but we don't have an allocation, we don't have money to do that. How is it in this narrative report, They give us a little bit more detail as to what they've decided should be beneficiaries of VFAs. And they're saying it's Indigent girls, so it's girls at school, quintile 1 to 3. It's Indigent women. It's women who will receive NSFAS and women in state care. But if we just look at those three, how do we argue that a woman who receives child support grants, foster care grants, disability grants, or, and the reason they receive a social grant is because of the impoverishment, on what basis can we then decide actually those people won't be receiving these sanitary towels? Only if you're in a school or if you're in state care. So I think the issue is really very complex. But more importantly, members, the issuing of sanitary towels is but one aspect of sexual reproductive health care and of issues of violence and of so many other things. And given the economic recession and given the competing priorities, how is it going to ensure that we don't lose other priorities? I'm not saying the provision of sanitary towels is not important, but we can't just push for sanitary towels when the fact that many girls often don't go to school just because of gang violence or because of bullying at school or because of sexual abuse. So it's a package of things. And it can't only be given to be thought about in isolation. But more importantly, how are we costing this policy when we don't sit with the budget to actually issue it? We've seen initiatives, KZN, Limpopo, where departments out of their own free will partner with funders, stakeholders, and they get a donation. But that's not sustainable. So a lot more work needs to be done around the sanitary facilities. 9-point plan. The 9-point plan is crucial, but what is our department actually analysing here? Because if we don't have a M&E framework, if we haven't finished that toolkit, what are we going to analyse every quarter? And also, when we look further as to how many departments, there's so many departments, so many programs and entities just within the economic cluster. We don't have the capacity to do that. National dialogue. What's the point of a national dialogue? If you're going into community and engaging with women, firstly, ethics of confidentiality. How do you make sure that you don't raise expectations that when I talk about my problem as a community member, my expectation is you're going to solve it for me. As government, you're going to make it better, whether it's making sure that that interdict gets delivered, that I'm not harassed at the clinic or at the police station. So what's the role of a department in doing these dialogues? Because if you're looking at research, the Interministerial Committee previously done extensive work around that. The CGE has done work around gender-based violence. In actual fact, they tabled the report for us to consider. Awareness raising and campaigns and initiatives again. What's the forecast? We've got so many, I think we've got 9, 10 and 14 different activities and initiatives. What are we looking at for every initiative? Do we have an idea of how many women we want to attend and what's the actual cost going to be? And how are we going to determine what's the impact? Are we evaluating that? And then just on the last page, I would like members to go to your APP. In terms of the technical descriptors, if you move to page 41 of your APP, this is the actual book, the annual performance plan of our department. Do you have members got a copy? So when we look at the technical descriptors, so at the back on page 41, what they do is they, the department, is the requirement, they're supposed to take each indicator and explain to you what's the indicator and who's the key person responsible. Page 41. So if you go to page 41, the first strategic objective. First strategic objective, and it's and the sub-program is departmental management. The title is Strengthen Good Governance to ensure that the Department of Women delivers on its mandate. If we look at the objective responsibility, in other words, who's responsible for this? It's DDGs and chief directors. So in other words, they're responsible for ensuring good governance, and it entails looking at the implementation of agreed upon management action plan, which is commendable. What I've looked at is when you go to the rest of the technical descriptives, so whether it's around corporate for each of the programs, for the objective responsibility, you only have chief financial officer, a chief director or director. You don't have a DDG or a DG assigned to any of the other indicators or objectives. So you can have a look. I'll take you through some examples. So if we go to page 41, program 1, the indicator there is around the risk profile. If you move to page 42, it says the indicator responsibility, chief risk officer. That's if you go to the next key performance indicator, you'll see the indicator responsibility lies with the director. If you move to throughout to any other programs, program 2 or 3, you won't find the responsibility assigned to a DDG or DG in any of that, in any of the other indicators or strategic objectives. Why am I raising this, members? I think it's quite important. Our biggest struggle has been program 2 and 3. How do we, more so program 2, how do we get this department to deliver on what we wanted? And if you think of how the executive works, line management and responsibility. The DG has is a key person responsible to as the accounting officer, and is assisted by the chief financial officer, the CFO. Then it's cascaded to your next level down, which is your DDG. And under your DDGs, you have chief directors and directors. So when we, and if you think about our quarterly report, who comes to present? CFO, DG, yeah. But if in our APP, they're actually only linked to one strategic objective, how do we hold them to account for the non-performance or performance of program 2 and 3? That's very important. I don't understand how what's the link between your chief directors to your DDGs and your DG. Because what's the DG doing to be held to account for? Because it's definitely not in the APP. You can go through all of those strategic objectives and indicators. It's the responsibility assigned down to the chief director and a director. And bearing in mind, in terms of decision making, the chief director, I don't think, would have the same authority to be able to change whether it's finances or sign off, let alone a change in the target or indicator. So I think that's something we should explore, because again, it's about strengthening this accountability. Would you be held to account in this department if something is not delivered on? Can you hold the DDG to account now? Because actually, there's nothing that links the DDG or the DG to program 2 or 3 at all. It's chief director and director. Let me just, I've got 5 minutes and then I'll wrap up quickly. So So if you just move over to page 3, what I've done is I've looked at each of the BRR notifications. So for every program, I pulled out what are the necessary BRR recommendations. So at the end of page 3, the thing about these SMART objectives, we constantly hammer, make sure your objectives are SMART. Again, we need some sort of assurance that how do they make sure that these objectives are SMART? We don't want a third year in which they submit a revised ATP a month before the financial year end. So we've got to ask that question. As we move over to page 4, I think just around the legislative and policy reform, the additional course bill is before Parliament. There's nothing in the ATP that talks to what the role of our department is going to be in terms of giving input in terms of key legislation. That, I mean, I've just pulled out one goal that's before Parliament. I think it's, again, to ask the department, we've got a fundamental role to play, what are you going to be doing? I'm just trying, given our time constraints. If we turn to page 11, please. So on page 11, I've got a table that looks at audit costs, which is external and property payments. As Crystal indicated, audit costs together with two other cost drivers form a significant part of our expenditure. When I compared what we're spending for that item in relation to public enterprise and economic development, and you're going to ask me, why did I choose those two departments? Well, I look at the list of departments and I say, well, besides us with the lowest allocation, which are the other two? And those were more or less the second and third last votes with the least amount of allocation. So our audit costs, and bearing in mind our budget is smaller compared to enterprise and economic development. We're spending more in terms of our audit costs compared to economic development. So if you look at page 11, so for page 11 it shows the total budget, so it's 127 for 1780 for our department. Public enterprises has a budget of 266 million and economic development has 141. They also have a transfer, and I think and their transfer is to invest in cooperation and trade of 656. So when you take those transfers away, what's the actual operational cost? So for audit costs, we're spending over 3 million, which is 3% of our budget, 1780. Public enterprises spend 1% for their audit costs. Economic development spends 2%. Yeah, it's 3.47. So again, I'm asking, well, we've got a very small budget. How come we're paying so much for our audit costs? Relative to other departments who have bigger budgets, and they're technically spending less. Property payments. We're spending 15 million. Public enterprises are spending 10, and economic development 43. So economic development saying 30%, that's a lot, but they've got more staff. We've got less staff. Public enterprises are spending 10. They've got more staff compared to us. Again, we've raised the issue of why are we spending so much? Because if it's 15 million, we've got three floors in Pretoria that we're utilizing. So we're technically spending 5 million per floor. That's a lot of money. And yes, they indicated to us that Public Works had gone into a lease agreement that they were signed, but they needed to come back to us. Because that's one way in which we can look at, if we can be spending less on property, we can be allocating more to programs. Just one last thing before we go. Page 15, the 9-point plan. So we've indicated we've got a key performance indicator to look at that. And they always talk about the presidential directive, but the presidential directive was in relation to the report that we developed, Fact of Women in the Economy. That was the presidential directive. We had that, and then after that, the president said, you know what, each with the department in the economic cluster, there needs to be prioritization around matters related to women. So it didn't come out of nowhere. It actually came as an offspring from that Women and Faith report. But that's also fallen off the agenda for our department. What happened to the follow-up of those recommendations? But just as we close on page 16, I've given a summary of 9.10. These are all the departments, along with the initiatives. Practically, on a quarterly basis, what are we actually going to, are we going to analyze all of these departments, with all of the programs and all of these initiatives, and how are we going to do that? When we don't have an MNE framework that's finalized and we don't have a toolkit. There are more issues, but I've just highlighted some of the key things which I feel, okay, maybe, sorry, one absolute last thing. Page 18, the gender focal points. The previous Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disability has did extensive work on gender mainstreaming and gender responsive budgeting. DPSA developed a strategy around gender mainstreaming in the public service. Again, this department didn't start from a clean slate. Our Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disability had these policies in place in our annual report in 11-12. So from 11-12 until now, how is it that we still can't finish gender responsive budgeting framework as well as gender mainstreaming framework and work around gender focal points? The recommendations were there, it just wasn't implemented. So it's not to say that this department needed to start from scratch. It was work that they could have used. And actually, in terms of officials that have been around, there were officials that worked in DPSA, that worked in the previous Department of Women, Children with Disabilities. So there is institutional memory and capacity and skill, but we're not somehow seeing this come to fruition. I do feel there's a need and a place for this department. Our oversight has reminded us again of what is required. Something needs to shift, and I need to think when we look at our budget, how do we hold this department better to account in terms of ensuring that they actually deliver on what is fundamental and crucial. Thank you.
Before I give honourable members, I would like to introduce the honourable members to the new member. Honourable Phumzile Pengu, the whip of the portfolio committee. The chairperson is not in today because she's attending the CA2 meeting in Johannesburg. Honourable Seke, Honourable Majeke, Honourable Chwewu, Honourable Standa, Honourable Robinson. Behind you is Honourable Sander Mervo. Yes, next to me is the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, Ms. Nelly Swah Nobatana, and Christelle is our researcher, and Ms. Kashiwa is also the content advisor of the portfolio committee. Honourable members, as I have been saying that, has introduced all of you to our new member. I'd like the... Oh, we have a... Talin was here giving us the document. And we have a... the TMG members. And also Tembagazi is from the Multi-Party Women Caucus. We are having all this, but I'm going to give the members the opportunity, because the department is outside now, to ask questions. I have an honorable panel member, honorable chairman. Okay, that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I wanted to also draw our attention. There is a While I had a problem with the property payments, which we have discussed, and I think, I mean, you see, in essence for me, we've raised a couple of issues with them over time. Firstly, it's the issue of the excessive spend in administration. We are now asked today to consider another revised APP, but they never take on board any of the suggestions we give them. We have spoken to them about the property leases. Look at that amount. So, for example, in the APP, to the amount of money they're spending on stationery, printing, and office supplies, it's gone up from 767,000 to 1.78 million. I mean, it's absolutely big money that they don't have. But now another thing is, you see, so they're spending bulk of their budget still in administration. They've dropped the number of targets, and they think now we must be pleased with the fact that they want to do desktop research, which any of us can do from their laptop. And secondly, they've come with a sanitary dignity campaign, which all of us as MPs have been driving for from Parliament. So it's not something that they miraculously decided they want to deliver on. And they're going to make it their flagship program, but as Kashifa has pointed out, you know, unless they've got other departments coming on board, there's nothing they're going to be able to do. So, you know, I get slightly annoyed that we have to entertain them again today on the same issues that we've been raising with them for how long. I'm concerned about, for example, the spend in administration, because they told us they cannot do anything about it because they need that amount of people in administration because of Treasury. Treasury told us something different. And then if you go through their budget, just the amount of money they waste, for example, on stationery, printing, and office supplies. And then, I mean, it can't be that a department that its core function is to monitor and evaluate. What wants to tell us, but by 2019, when we go to the next election, they still are figuring it out. I mean, I really, you know, it makes me want to say, rather than give this department's money to the CGE, especially if I hear you when you say they've got a role to play, but not if they come, if they're not coming on board in terms of the basis, then really, I mean, I'm getting really worried. We're halfway through, they're still not delivering on the basis. And I think really we need to be tough on them today, because they asked us to come on board by assisting them to accept the fact that they keep on changing their plan, but the very basics we ask them to do is still never in place, and that makes me really annoyed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, too. I'm worried, Kashifa, you raised the integrated plan in terms of the sanitary sector. Without the social development and without the education and health, they can't do anything. So their target is to include those three departments, and how they are going to deliver, how many times. We said, kids or whoever is using sanitary pads, it should be a monthly distribution, or it should be a quarterly distribution. And by now, they should be having all that set. And at the same time, they should also be moving on the VAT-free, because we also want National Treasure to remove VAT on those sanitary pads. So their target must be based on those things that we said initially. I think I agree with Honorable Fanny Mark that we have said this thing on over and over again, and they are not implementing it. And then on the issue of the APPs, there is no way we can evaluate them. actually, what we're doing now, we are just not doing justice to ourselves. Because we say things, they don't change. And I was suggesting that we must only use parliament resources in industry. We should have had a meeting where it is only you presenting on this thing, we making input and writing a report and sending it to them. Because we speak to people who are not prepared to change. Then maybe the next option can also go to appropriation committee and say that they must separate the money of the CGE and the money of the department. Maybe that should be the option, but I don't know. Maybe the ceiling of, because maybe when you refuse to give them a budget as a department, they will know that we have powers over them. But it's up to us. We also must be willing to take them a little bit further, you see. So as long as we are talking, they will not implement. There is a need that women need them to give them empowerment. If they are not talking to departments, they don't have clear programs with those departments, there is no way that women on the ground can receive anything coming from government, because we have seen that those departments don't allocate money. And this ministry was basically made to ensure that all departments mainstream. And those departments are not mainstreaming. The issue of the 9-point plan, they can't implement that 9-point plan if they don't have land. And let's take ocean economy. Which coast is owned by government? Which land is owned by government at the coastal level? We don't have that. We don't know now. And what are the programs that they are going to implement? On whose land are they going to buy the land and come back and implement the program, you see? So all those things they can't answer because they have not interacted with the land and reform departments. So if they don't interact with those departments that they are supposed to oversee, then they can't develop programs. The programs they're giving us, it's not acceptable. And we said it from first year, from 2014, we said it's good that we want everyone to mainstream, but show us how. They help us. And we said they must involve us. They must involve us as a committee in their planning. They are refusing. They have not called us in all their threat plans. So it means that they don't need us to do things for them or to work together with us. And then, but they need our money. Because it is money from parliament that they need to operate the department. So it's up to us members to say, if you don't do this, we don't do this. But my suggestion as an individual, can't push you. You also have to agree with what I'm suggesting. But the power is within parliament to give departments money.
We need to close. Ms. Chu, I discussed an option with Nedishwa, and I was very apprehensive to bring it to the committee. But I'm going to ask the advisor for appropriation to come and talk to us about this. In the Money Bold Act, please, I want you to I'm going to email it to you. Please check Section 10.5 and Section 10.6. It allows the committee to advise appropriations regarding a particular subsection of a vote. So in other words, if the committee is saying we're really struggling with this program, you as the authority, according to this act, to actually say the money will be given on condition. So like a conditional grant to provinces, local governments and so forth, this committee can take a decision that hypothetically for program 2 and 3, you want to identify 3 targets and say, our decision is the money is there, but it will be given on condition that you deliver. Every quarter we want to see A, B, C, D. So once we see it, Treasury then can be given the go-ahead. We can now release the next set of funds. So we're not saying we're not going to be having the whole boat under a condition, but there could be particular aspects.
Program.
When you want delivery, there could be a condition. But the minister has 2 days to respond in relation to what you suggest. But I think it needs to be taken through your caucuses for discussion. If not, it's in the provision in the Act. No one's ever used it before. But you've got to get, I think it requires discussion within your study groups and politically, because the implications, political implications, because it's a very strong stance you're taking. And as a committee, as a collective, needs to bind and as a unit say this is what we agree to. So I will email this to all members via Lelitwa. It's section 10.5 and section 10.6. And when we discuss our report, I will ask the advisor for appropriations to come and talk to practically what the implications are and how it will run. So there is a provision, Ms. Chu.
Yeah.
It's just that.
I know that provision.
Yeah. I would suggest you need to take it to your political parties, discuss at strategy level and your caucus, and see what the position is. Because what we don't want to come across is it's not just our committee taking up an issue with this minister.
Mm.
It's for whatever department, in whatever other boat, they could also use that. So I think you need to be clear in how your position is, that also the committee doesn't become a target for saying that we're not wanting to see improvement. It is about wanting to see improvement. But I think you need to discuss it.
Unfortunately, when we took over in 2014 until now, we have destroyed everything that previous department had, tried to build. Though we had some, challenges in the previous department. But what is it that we are looking behind in this case? So I want to agree with another member that let's take it back to our own caucuses, let's discuss it, but surely we must come up with a way to it. We don't have a choice, because now we are speaking of a radical economic transformation. But if you are not radical as members of parliament and members of this committee, then where are we going? Because we must take radical decisions so that we can be able to reach that transformation, radical economic transformation that we want. So that's the best route to take. Because we're speaking about the NDP. How does this strategic plan and the revised APP talk to the employment, the creation of employment opportunities to women so that we can be able to address the NDP? So I think we have to be radical on what we do. We have been in this committee for 10 years now, or for 8 years now, but there's no change. We are demoralized, some of us. So let's take the best route that can be able to assist our women out there. Because we as members of parliament, they're going to, we are part, they will be saying we are part of this thing. Thank you,
Chair. Honourable members, we are only left with 10 caucuses and only going to be with 10 minutes before we call the department. Honourable Chair, Honourable Chair,
I was saying that close. also help us to go into the other departments that are economic class, to say to them, these are the issues that relate to women that we want your budget to address. We must do that, because you'll bring those departments here and talk whatever you want to talk. Even last year, we did the same thing. In 2014, we called them. Even today, I can assure you, they don't have those programs we suggested to them. So it even helps us to encroach into their own budget. Thank you very much. You will.
I just want to say that I endorse what has been said. I think it is right. For too long, we've been taken for granted, and one does hear, what are these women doing in Parliament? They don't represent our interests. So I think it would be really good if we can take a concerted stand on this. So thank you for that suggestion.
Honourable members, I fully agree with all of you. Because I know that the failure of this department will be the responsibility of us as a portfolio committee member. I remember that we have been very radical in telling the department what to do. And even the president himself has also given directives to all the departments, as well as this department. Yeah, but we don't see anything that is happening so far, although we know that they are very clever in giving us the information that is not assisting us and also not assisting the women out there. But I'm very much depending on what are you going to say to the minister today, because the minister is also going with his here and the department is here. And I would also like to say to honorable members, you know, we have been saying this and this almost every time. We have been able to go for oversight. We have seen that there is nothing that has shown that the department is on the ground. The people, the women out there, they don't even know that there is this department, because the only other department that are there. The issue of a responsive budgeting also is not responding to the issues of women. But we have seen that the other departments, although they are doing something, but it's not on the ground, it's not assisting the women. But I'm saying to you that because the minister is here and the department is here, let us make sure that the department is doing what it's supposed to do. If not, then we will take action on it. Because if they don't do that, then we will go back to our caucus and discuss fully on the issues of that. And thereafter, we will say, we will ask the appropriations to assist us, as well as in Treasury, as we always do, that they must assist us on these issues. Because the revised APPs, if they change before the financial year, it's also giving us the implication that this department is not even taking us seriously, members, because we have been complaining about these issues almost every time. And honorable members, I'm going to give you just 5 minutes break. Thereafter, I will call the department to come. Thank you very much. Thank you, Kashiva and Christopher.
Throw my file on the floor. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.